I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Many pundits say it's already over. Polls show President Barack Obama with a commanding lead over Republican challenger Mitt Romney. Not so fast, partner. Everyone loves a comeback story. Well, except the Obama campaign and its supporters. Today, our political pundits tell us what they think about those polls, and we'll check in on the contentious race between incumbent Claire McCaskill of Missouri and Republican challenger Todd Akin. Also, can Missouri Governor Jay Nixon hold on to his seat by avoiding eye contact with his Republican challenger? We'll find out on Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. 43 days to go until Election Day 2012. Some polls show President Barack Obama and Republican Mitt Romney running dead even. In Missouri, Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill is leading Republican Todd Akin, whose campaign is showing new signs of life following his comment on legitimate rape. Meantime, Governor Jay Nixon of Missouri appears to be on cruise control in his bid for a second term, and Democrats are confident they'll emerge from Election Day, continuing to hold most statewide offices. In Kansas, the State Objections Board made it official last week. President Obama's name will remain on the ballot after questions arose, yes, about whether he qualifies to be president. Today we'll run down all the big races and big developments with our political pundits. They are KU political scientist Burdette Loomis. Bird, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
MU political scientist Peverell Squire. Pev, always good to have you too. Good morning.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
And also here is my colleague at the Kansas City Star, Dave Helling. David, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Claire McCaskill and Todd Akin held their first debate Friday morning over in Columbia. Professor Squire, what did we learn in that exchange? What did you pick up?
Well, I don't think much has changed in this race since Akin made his regrettable remarks. I think right now everybody's just kind of holding their breath until tomorrow to make sure that Akin stays in the race. Tomorrow's his last day to exit. And I think after Wednesday, we'll really have a better sense of how hard McCaskill is going to continue to go after Akin.
Is there much expectation, Professor, that that Todd Akin might exit this race in the next 24 hours?
I don't think anybody thinks he's apt to do that. He's holding a fundraiser with Newt Gingrich today. All indications are he's going to continue his campaign, and certainly I think he's maintained enough support that he has at least an outside reason to think he can still pull off a victory.
And he has a big statewide tour plan that he let the media know about on Saturday as well. Well, David, the big question is Congressman Akin's remarks about legitimate rape. Have any signs emerged that he can overcome those comments and, you know, give Senator McCaskill a run for her money?
Well, some signs. The polling, at least according to some pollsters, is closer than perhaps Senator McCaskill would like.
Yeah.
And remember, we've talked about this on the show several times. Missouri is still a plus five or plus six generic Republican state, probably at the statewide level. So Akin has some advantages in that regard. But the professor and others have pointed out that the congressman has severe money problems. In the first place, Claire McCaskill has saved her money and can certainly just bombard him after the deadline passes tomorrow. More than that, the national Republican hierarchy has said repeatedly they're not coming back to Missouri. A lot of people don't believe them. I do. I think that and they repeated that, by the way, on Sunday. Rance Priebus and others said we're just not coming in. In part, I believe them because I don't think that they can make a threat like that and then reverse themselves without some damage long term. But second, the Republican Party at the senatorial level is starting to have problems across the country. They've got problems in Massachusetts, Indiana,
Montana,
Wisconsin, Montana, Virginia. And I think there's going to be an argument made among Republicans that the money would be – that what money they do have – would be better spent in those states trying to shore up those Republican candidates than they will against Todd Akin. And so he's at a severe, with 6 weeks to go, severe financial disadvantage. He can be outspent 4, 5, 6 to 1 on television. That's going to be enormously difficult for him to overcome.
David, there's a little bit of sunlight in that equation, though, for Congressman Akin on Friday. Senator Jim DeMint now is talking openly about perhaps opening up his spigot and providing some money to his colleague Todd Akin. Bird,
it could change things.
It
strikes me that I'm not following this race as closely, being 40 miles away. But I have seen some of those polls, seeing things close up. I think I do take the Republicans more or less at their word, mostly for why you say that they've got other fish to fry. On the other hand, Gingrich is coming in. DeMint, he's starting to bring some people back, mm-hmm. and there's another big pot of money out there, particularly if in the last month Romney looks like he's going nowhere. Suddenly Karl Rove says, I can throw X million dollars at Akin. I didn't promise not to.
Mm-hmm. Well, Karl Rove did, though. In fact, I talked to him on the elevator at the Democratic National Convention, of all places. And Rove repeated to me at that point his lack of interest in being a part through American Crossroads in this race. Now, that doesn't mean that there couldn't be anonymous money coming in at the end. I think that's what Democrats fear the most, that some sort of 501c4 would be set up out of nowhere, $10 million dumped in. You wouldn't be able to trace it, and that remains a possibility. If there were 6 months to go before the election, Steve, you could see it. 6 weeks to go. That means Todd Akin realistically has to raise and spend about $1 million a week between now and Election Day just to sort of stay even with what Claire McCaskill and the Democrats would be able to pour in. And I don't see any scenario in which there will be $1 million a week available on his side. This fundraiser tonight with Newt Gingrich may bring in $500,000. He's raising some money online. But to match her dollar for dollar with 6 weeks to go without the help of American Crossroads or the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee just seems an enormously high hurdle, given that she's probably 2 or 3 points up minimum right now.
Peverell Squire from the University of Missouri, do you see any daylight emerging for Congressman Akin? Does he have a chance in this race or maybe not?
I think it's an uphill climb for him. Certainly, he's got a state that is a comfortable place for most Republicans to run. But he's looking at an incumbent senator who has a lot of resources still at her disposal. And he, unfortunately, his mistake fits right into the narrative she wanted to pursue against him, was that he was just too conservative, even for Missouri. And I think she's got a lot of ammunition on her side, and I suspect most national Republicans have made that calculation that Akin might be able to pull it out, but they probably have better prospects in a number of other states.
Yeah, I was really struck by Senator McCaskill's TV ad in which she proclaims that she's number 50, smack dab in the middle, the ideological middle of the United States Senate. Bert, have you seen that ad?
No, but I get it completely.
I mean, strong ad, I thought.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think most of the time that would seem to us as a pretty darn strong argument. These days, with people pushed to the sides, perhaps not so much. But I think for someone like McCaskill, who has curried that image all along, that it's pretty powerful.
You know, Bert, have you ever seen a candidate overcome a controversy or, I guess in this case, a misstatement on the caliber of this one, whether it's in Missouri or Kansas or really anywhere for that matter? I mean, can candidates overcome mistakes that have been blown up into what this one has become?
Yeah, I certainly think that they can, but I think Dave's point was probably the correct one.
Dave had a miracle.
6 months, you might be able to
move on,
put a little scar tissue over it. But I think that it's still fresh enough, and I think that Claire will, to keep the metaphor going, keep picking at that scab.
Well, and the other thing that Senator McCaskill is doing, and she did it in the debate repeatedly, Steve, as you know, you covered that story, is she's trying to make the case that the comment about quote unquote legitimate rape was of a piece with other positions that Todd Akin has taken, that it isn't that in isolation.
Yeah.
And when you talk about trying to overcome it, that's another thing to keep in mind. And I think it's the explanation for why the Republicans abandoned him, the sort of mainstream Republican leadership abandoned him so quickly, was that they thought the comment was not an isolated incident.
Yeah.
He had come out against school lunches, student loans. I mean, you just go down the list. He's a very, very conservative guy. And I think the national Republicans, when they heard the rape comment, decided that it was part of a pattern from Congressman.
And we'll be seeing more of this, they thought.
And I think Claire McCaskill, as you know, at least in the debate, really didn't – she talked about the rape comment, but she pivoted immediately to, well, he's against this, he's against that, he's against the other thing, and to try to paint him as an extremist.
Yeah.
So and as a corollary to that, I think that there is some thought among some Republicans in Missouri that certainly the leadership will come back in with money, that somehow they'll help Akin at the end. Over the weekend, he was quoted as calling out by name Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn, who's the head of the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, by name. You know, they're trying to rig this election. They're not helping a fellow Republican. That isn't the kind of sweet talk that you would expect if you do want some of that money to come back in. So he's turning to Newt Gingrich, who is not overwhelmingly popular in the Republican Party, Phyllis Schlafly, others. That feeds into this argument that McCaskill is making. Just a tough, tough road to hoe.
Peverill, have you ever seen a candidate overcome a misstatement on the magnitude of this one?
I've been sort of scanning my memory to see if I can come up with one, and I can't. The Bird's probably got one in mind.
I don't.
There's somebody out there.
Yeah.
But I suspect this came at just the wrong time, and it fit so well into the argument that McCaskill wanted to make that it really left him adrift. And I think we've also pointed out the other fact, which is I don't think he cares for the Republican leadership very much, and they certainly don't like him either. And so there really aren't a lot of friends for him to turn to within the Republican Party to help him salvage this particular campaign.
Yeah, the other problem he has, Steve, is that he is not well known across the state, did not run an aggressive television campaign during the primary, particularly on this side of the state, because he didn't have the money. So most of what a lot of voters know about Todd Akin is only the rape comment.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, as I say, on this side of the state, he's very well known, of course, in St. Louis, where he's the congressman, and he's fairly well known along the the sort of Bible Belt and the Ozarks and in the Boot Heel. But up here, he's not well known at all. And so unless he has, again, the finances to dislodge that image among voters, independent voters, particularly in western Missouri, again, it's just a very, very tough hurdle.
Let me get our listeners to chime in here. If you have a thought on the McCaskill-Akin race, does Todd Akin still have a shot here, or in your mind is the race over? 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Bert.
I guess the other thing I'd say is that this race is really important nationally. That it changed the whole dynamic of the Senate scoreboard. And for it to be a pivotal race and still not attract the Republican money, I think we were all a little leery at first. Well, they'll say something, but they'll see it later on. They'll come back in. And they've stayed out. And right now, if you had to bet, you'd probably bet that Democrats, against really all odds, are more likely to control the Senate than not. And 6 weeks ago, that was a non-starter.
And if that happens, if the Democrats retain control of the Senate, they will look at Missouri as the single biggest
missed
the Republicans will look at Missouri as their single biggest loss, largely because Claire McCaskill was clearly the most vulnerable of any incumbent Republican or Democrat in the entire Senate. She is deeply unpopular in Missouri. Barack Obama is deeply unpopular in Missouri, particularly on items like the Affordable Care Act and other votes that she's taken, the stimulus, other things. Whether or not she's in the smack in the middle of the Senate is not of concern to the bulk of Missouri voters. All they wanted was a reasonable alternative to Claire McCaskill, and she was going to lose. And for whatever reason, it appears they got the Republicans got the most unreasonable potential candidate against the incumbent.
You know, listeners can also reach us on Twitter at KCUR up to date. You know, maybe it's time to ask this question, Bird. I mean, is there a question of fairness here? You know, Todd Akin has been a congressman for six terms in the state legislature prior to that time. No question he's a conservative guy. But what's the fairness of taking, what, 6 seconds of an interview to one TV reporter, you know, a month ago? And I think it's fair to say the TV reporter didn't even recognize the import of what he had on his hands when it was said, you know, and this one comment blowing up to become what it's become and sort of dirtying his entire political career. Is that fair?
Couple of thoughts there. First, you got to put your big boy pants on and play.
It's a U.S. Senate race.
Right. And Romney's finding that out with the 47% thing. The second is, I do think that it opens a door into a whole lot of other positions, as we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And Akin was not especially well known. And I think that when you see the variety of positions that he has adopted, really very far to the right, I think it's fair.
Speaking of one of those positions, let's go to David from Kansas City, Missouri. David, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, I couldn't help but wonder if it's actually true what McCaskill accused him of in a recent TV commercial, that he doesn't believe that rape victims have access to emergency contraception.
I think that's correct. He's opposed to all abortion under any circumstance, as far as I understand it, David. Hope that helps. Let's go to Diana from Olathe. Diana, you're on the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if the pundits could clarify something for me. It's my understanding that Todd Akin's comments, especially about rape victims, are not just peculiar to him, but they're part of the Republican Party's talking points as a strategy for expanding their base. Isn't there a doctor that is verifying that type of statement that Romney has a close relationship with?
Peverell, do you know anything about that?
There is one doctor who has made claims along these lines. He's been disavowed by, I would say, almost all of his colleagues. But you can always find somebody somewhere who has a label of an expert who will back you up on these things. But I think the Republicans certainly didn't want this conversation started. They didn't want it started the way that Akin prompted it. And I think one of the big reasons they ran away from him so fast was they knew that this would cause him not only problems in Missouri, but more likely cost mm-hmm. them some states elsewhere in the country.
And we should differentiate. There were actually two claims made in that interview by Congressman Akin. The first was that, in essence, he opposes abortion even in the cases of rape and incest, which is a fairly aggressive position, but not completely out of the mainstream of Republican thought. There are Republicans who have proposed that and support it. That isn't what got him into trouble. What got him into trouble was an allegation that somehow rape victims can prevent biologically their pregnancies.
Yeah.
And that, therefore, there is such a thing as legitimate as opposed to illegitimate rape. Most people found that remark deeply offensive and not supported by any science whatsoever. That's what got him in trouble. And as I suggest in my mind, in my view, it was that combined with other comments that he has made over the years that caused the mainstream Republicans to abandon the race.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Let's go to Bill from Grandview. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I really respect all three of your panelists, plus yourself. I love these kind of conversations.
Appreciate it, Bill.
The comment that I have is actually to your question, Mr. Kraske, of fairness.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Akin, as Mr. Romney, misspeak when they try to gloss over their real thoughts. I think Mr. Akin really did express his true thoughts. I don't think he's an intelligent man in totality. I mean, not in his area specific, he may be an expert of the businessman, but he's not a biologist. So he relied on another mythsayer, who some doctor promoting an idea, just like Mr. Romney, when he claims his 47%, for those who don't pay taxes, includes several millionaires or billionaires who don't pay income taxes. So I it's, to me, more the egregious expression of total ignorance. I mean, when you go to the Senate, or if you're being the president, you have to be able to at least understand a lot of things. And you can't let your prejudice just get in the way and saying, oh, well, one doctor says women can't get pregnant when they get raped, therefore that must be a fact. I mean, you have to have, in my mind, a more open willingness to learn and right. understand the real world. So I think that is more the expression that I think a lot of people would react, at least I did, when I heard Mr. Akins and Mr. Romney's comments.
Right. Bill, I appreciate the comments. Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, I guess it's time to move on, but Peverell Squire, no question, there are incredible distinctions between these two candidates. Voters have a pretty clear choice to make here, right?
There is a big difference between the two candidates, and I think one of the points that was raised earlier probably needs to be emphasized again. Mr. Akin is not terribly well-known around most of the state. He was really introduced to a lot of voters through Claire McCaskill's own commercials that sort of touted him as the most conservative in the Republican field.
That was during the primary in which she was trying to get him to be the nominee because that was the guy she wanted to run against. Yeah,
exactly. And so now he doesn't have the resources really to get out and get known very well outside of the western suburbs in St. Louis. So I really have a hard time envisioning a scenario where he manages to pull out a victory.
Okay.
Can I just say one other quick thing about the fairness of this issue?
Yeah.
It wasn't as if Todd Akin was asked a trick question or was asked something that might have confused the ordinary voter.
Basic stuff,
he's been in Congress for a long time. You have to be ready to answer the rape and incest question in terms of abortion, particularly if you want to be in the United States
Because
Senate.
They know it's coming at some
point. It has to come, particularly given his own political viewpoint. It's not unavoidable. And so to suggest that somehow reporters are unfair by talking about it when that question is sort of a base-level question for a Senate candidate is probably not a good thing.
Okay, let's move on to the presidential race. There was a day or two last week when Barack Obama appeared to be pulling into a significant lead in the race for the White House. Then over the weekend, there were two new polls from Gallup and Rasmussen showing the race once again in a dead heat. So, Bird, where on earth are we?
I think we're not at 5 or 6%. I don't think we're dead even. I think we're about around 3%.
Yeah.
I think I'm a big poll. You know, put all the polls together. See how you come out. And Gallup, Rasmussen historically has been Republican, and Gallup this year seems to be a little bit Republican in his lean. I would say that I think the consensus is about 3% and very steady here over the course of the last couple weeks since the Democratic convention.
How significant a lead is 3 points, Berg?
I think when you've got only a handful, 5-7% undecided, you're starting to vote today in some states.
Mm-hmm.
I think a solid 3% lead, particularly since it carries through almost all the swing states, the most important battleground states, at least at 3%, that I think it's pretty significant, but certainly not determinative at all.
Mm-hmm. Peverell, where do you think it is?
My guess is Bird's about right. I would say it's about 3% or so. And I think one of the sort of dirty little secrets of social science right now is that we have a harder time conducting a lot of these surveys than we did 10, 20 years ago because it's just become more difficult to get people to cooperate. It's harder to get them when they don't have landline phones. They only have cell phones.
And some pollsters don't check cell phones, as Dave and I wrote over the weekend. Yeah.
That's right. I mean, people won't pick up. You get a lot of automated surveys now, and you get these regularly here in Missouri, trying to figure out where you are in terms of your political orientation, and so it's hard right now for survey people to really give you solid numbers in which they have a great deal of confidence. So we're going to see a lot of numbers that will sort of bounce around, and so Bird's suggestion to sort of average them all together is the appropriate way to go.
Well, 3 points, but Bird, as you know, the Pew Center last week, it's a very highly regarded poll, had President Obama up by 8 points.
And it did, and it had
a lot.
It had a large end, too. It was about a 2,200
A huge sample,
end.
Yeah.
Still, I think that polls do go all over the place, and as Pev suggests. I think one of the things that's interesting right now is not just the question of who you're going to vote for. I think that's coming into focus more and more for people. But there's some data to suggest that the number of people who are identifying as Republicans is starting to decline substantially.
Nationally, you're talking about.
Yeah, over the last several weeks. And again, it's a compilation of polls. independents are creeping up a little bit, and of course a lot of independents really aren't. Democrats are holding their own, but Republicans are down around 26% in the self-identification. And so I think that's similar to what happened 4 years ago when more people saw themselves as Democrats than Republicans. And I think we have the feeling that, oh, this identification is something that is locked in. And at the margins, it's not locked in at all. People do change the way they identify, and maybe not register.
Mm-hmm.
But that means the lens that you're looking at. And I think that this connects back to the McCaskill story, the Aiken story, some of these gaffes, Clint Eastwood, whatever, that the Republican brand over the last couple of months has not been the greatest, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. I just wonder, Dave, you know, you and I were both in Tampa, Florida, covering the Republican National Convention, and most folks thought that convention was fairly successful. And then, of course, it was followed immediately by the Democrats coming during Labor Day week. And some folks have said, you know, boy, Democrats really caught a break there because they came after the Republicans. They were able to counter what the Republicans had to say about them during their convention week. And that seems to be a significant moment in the course of this campaign right now.
Right. I do think that the Democrats were given a bit of an advantage by being able to answer almost point by point what the Republicans had raised the week earlier. But I would say a couple of things. First, I'm still convinced that at the presidential level, people are making their minds up quite a bit earlier than we think, the actual number of undecideds and persuadables is much smaller than I think even the polls suggest. Even people who tell pollsters they're undecided, if you push them really hard, probably are leaning one way or the other or aren't going to vote. I mean, if you're truly undecided at the presidential level at this point, it's perhaps because you're not really focused on the campaign and don't really care that much about voting. I do think that 2012 will, polls aside, will resemble 2004 much more than 2008. 2004, in which George W. Bush was running against John Kerry, a Massachusetts politician, was largely a turnout election. That is to say, the Republicans at the end, and I think a lot of people gave Karl Rove credit for this, were able to motivate voters at a level the Democrats didn't anticipate. And ultimately, the 2 or 3 point margin by which Bush won that reelection was based largely on that turnout. So I think that we ought to pay a lot of attention in the next 6 weeks to what kind of voters are going to the polls to vote early, to see if the Democrats have the kind of enthusiasm that they're going to need, to see if their organization is at a place they'd like it to be. If not, then I think Mitt Romney still has a chance. I mean, I think that he's trailed for almost a year, which does suggest that a lot of opinions are locked in. But if those voters don't go to the polls, particularly in important states, then I think Mitt Romney, there's certainly a possibility, just as there was for John Kerry in 2004.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here about the all kinds of political races with our political pundits. We'll continue talking about Obama and Romney and take your phone calls at 816-235-2888. We'll talk about these two competing ideas out there that strike a lot of folks, this notion that a lot of people aren't inclined to vote to reelect President Barack Obama. But at the same time, Mitt Romney strikes a lot of folks as somewhat insincere. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's U.S. Senate debate, you'll find our coverage and analysis, as well as all of our previous broadcasts, at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, the latest in development news from around the area with Kansas City Star reporter Kevin Collison. Well, this hour we're visiting with our political pundits. They are KU political scientist Burdette Loomis, MU political scientist Peverell Squire, and my colleague from the Star, Dave Helling. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Who's going to win this big presidential race? That's the question on the table. Our email address, UpToDate at kcur.org, or tweet us at kcurUpToDate. Let's go to Dave from Overland Park. Dave, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question about the polling itself. From whatever or what I'm reading and hearing is that it tends to be skewed toward the Democrats. So they're polling more Democrats than Republicans, which tells me that they think more Democrats are going to show up at the poll this year than Republicans, which I don't think is true. Could you maybe tell us a little more about that?
Well, Dave, you and I wrote a long piece on polling that was
right
in Sunday's newspaper.
And
yeah,
there are different ways of polling people. And clearly, and I would invite everyone, by the way, to go read that story because I don't want to summarize all of it here. But the gist of it
probably a little bit more time than we have.
Yeah. But the gist of it is, and I think Bird talked about this a little bit, any one poll can be skewed one way or another. I do think that there may be a little oversampling of Democrats going on, although pollsters will suggest that's not the case. But the better way to look at polling is to look at the average over time.
Yeah.
And because I think most polling experts will tell you that the outliers tend to smooth themselves out, and you get some sense of the tendency of the race. Republican pollster, Democratic pollster, whatever. And in that sense, Barack Obama has led by 2 or 3 points for almost a year, almost exclusively for a year. It hasn't bounced around at all. Mitt Romney and the average did get very, very close the week of his convention, which, by the way, was the week after the Todd Akin comment. And I would argue, as we look back, the Akin comment may have thrown the entire Republican brand off its stride a little bit. But you know, I don't want to relitigate that. But so look at the average. And in that average, Obama has led, as I suggest, for almost a year. That suggests that he has a small but consistent lead regardless of the methodology of the poll.
And, Dave, a good place to go to get this average of polls that Dave is talking about is realclearpolitics.com. You just click on polls and you can get all kinds of different races. They average Senate races, the presidential race. You really can get a sense of where the race is. Well, there does seem to be, Peverell Squire, two competing ideas here. One is that the country is inclined not to reelect President Obama, given the state of the economy. The other is this, that, you know, Mitt Romney strikes a lot of voters as somewhat insincere. He's trying to run as a conservative when he's really not. In fact, his unfavorable ratings are as high or even higher than his favorable rating, and that's very rare for presidential nominees. How do you size all of that up, these two competing ideas?
Well, you know, we often try to forecast elections using things that include all kinds of variables, not among them the candidates themselves. And ultimately, an election comes down to a comparison of two or more candidates. And I think for most voters, even if they have reservations about President Obama, they still have to evaluate what's the alternative. And as we've suggested, the surveys show that a lot of people have reservations about Mitt Romney, and he's had a hard time sort of overcoming the sort of negative image that he started off the campaign with and really hasn't been able to shake. And so I think as voters approach the polling booth, and as Bird pointed out, you know, people have already started voting in a number of states, it becomes a comparison. And so far that comparison still works in President Obama's favor, even though people at times are less enthused about him than they might have been 4 years ago.
You know, I don't think folks and voters can underestimate this one dynamic, Bird, that's out there right now that I just mentioned, this idea that in many polls, Mitt Romney's favorable rating is lower than his unfavorable rating. And as David Brooks was pointing out on this station on Friday during his weekend to come analysis with Mark Shields, that's an extremely rare development in our politics, that typically nominees from both major parties at this point in an election campaign are ahead in their favorable rating than their unfavorable rating.
Sure. And I think that you go back and you see the economy, the 8% plus unemployment, mediocre jobs figures, and you know what the Republicans want to do. And yet that narrative hasn't been spun out at all. Every time they say they're going to come back to it, and something gets in the way, whether it's Akin, whether it's the 47%, whether it's the unfortunate, I think, attack on the president with Libya, for example. And you see this being reflected. I don't want to make too much about it, but you see a lot of conservative commentators, you know, not attacking Obama, but attacking the candidate with whom they would be most inclined. So I do think it's a serious problem. And if you get to this kind of comparison election rather than a referendum election, that's helping Obama.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. We received this email: will there be a Republican-instigated October surprise to embarrass President Obama, David, such as a war between Israel and Iran? Recall the Reagan campaign's secret negotiations with the Iranians to delay the release of the American hostages until after the election, thus thwarting President Carter's efforts to win re-election.
Well, I don't think the Republicans can launch a preemptive strike on the
I think Bibi is registered someplace as a Republican.
But I don't think that's likely. What I do think is Bert is exactly right. The biggest fear the Obama campaign has always had was that this would be a referendum election, that it would in essence come down to anybody but Obama, and the other candidate would not matter. And I think I think this is one of Mitt Romney's problems, is for a year they campaigned as if that were the case, that it would be a referendum election. And so they didn't really have to be very specific. They didn't want to make any mistakes, and that the they didn't see it as a choice election until about 6 or 8 weeks ago. And at that point, I do think the Romney people started to understand that the reason they were behind by 2 or 3 points is that indeed the American people wanted an alternative. That's why they picked Paul Ryan, because I think they wanted to sort of make a statement that we do have an alternative argument to make in terms of the economy and foreign policy. But they haven't been able to make that argument stick, at least to date. So what dislodges that is, as the writer suggests, is some sort of surprise at the end of the race that reverts it to an anybody but Obama campaign. That's what happened in large degree, people forget this, to Jimmy Carter in 1980, because there was that last weekend, they were fairly well tied, and then that last weekend when there was another potential release of the hostages story that was dashed. And at that point, I do think there was a great movement of people saying, do we really want 4 more years of this guy? Mm-hmm. They answered no, and they all went to Ronald Reagan in droves. Let me just say quickly, people try to compare this election to previous elections all the time, and I think the dynamic in contemporary politics is completely different than it was in 1980. So I don't think you can do a comparison to what's happening now precisely. But the concept, Steve, is the same, that there might be some sort of development in the last couple of weeks that would cause it to revert to a referendum election. I just don't see that happening at this point. Very difficult to do. And as long as it's a choice election, I think Mitt Romney has some problems.
Yeah. Peverell, given what Dave Helling was saying a few minutes ago about the fact that there are so few undecided voters in this election, are the debates going to make any difference when they come up finally next month? There'll be three of them. Do they matter?
They usually do matter, and it will be certainly an opportunity for Romney to try to change the dynamics of the race. He would have to have some cooperation from Obama on that score, some Obama mistake that Romney can exploit. But my guess is we'll probably tune into the debates. Both candidates will do reasonably well, and it won't change things in the end. But there's always that opportunity there for the challenger to make a statement and a landmine that the incumbent might step on.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking politics with our political pundits, Burdette Loomis from KU, Peverell Squire from MU, and from The Star, Dave Helling. Let's scoot on here to something that happened in Kansas last week. A board called the Kansas Objections Board ruled that President Obama is legally entitled to be on the 2012 ballot. David, why was this even an issue?
Because a citizen filed a challenge to the president's place on the ballot, and the mechanism in Kansas for adjudicating those objections goes to this board, which involved Chris Kobach, Derek Schmidt, and Jeff Collier, the lieutenant governor.
All Republicans,
by the way. All Republicans. I don't think it would have gotten any attention at all, maybe a one-paragraph story until – the board decided to ask for more information, quote unquote, which kept the story alive over a weekend. Again, not the smartest thing, I wrote, for the Republicans to do. Every time they move the debate, Steve, off of the economy and jobs and the price of a gallon of gas, I think the Mitt Romney brand, the Republican brand, suffers. And so I don't think at the end of the day it was the smartest thing politically. On the merits, I think Chris Kobach has argued that he had to, you know, give the complaint a fair hearing, and perhaps that's true. But the politics, the optics, as they say, wasn't very good.
And, Bert, this became a national news story. This was not just a story in Kansas and Kansas City. It was a story all around the country.
No, it got national, even a little international play. And I think I'd take a little different tack on Chris Kobach. I think that he welcomed it. I think that it played to his base. And then, conveniently, The objection was dropped.
I would agree with that, by the way.
And he didn't have to make a decision on it because they would have decided to keep him on the ballot. I don't think so. He could play to his very conservative adherents.
But why would he do that if Dave is right and it embarrasses the brand?
To be really candid here, I think Chris Kobach is out for Chris Kobach. I don't think Chris Kobach's out for the brand, the Republican brand. And this plays into something else, that across the country, I do think you've got this balance of pro-Obama and anti-Obama. In Kansas, Barack Obama and health care, whatever Obama has done, has been disastrous for the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-Obama sentiment in Kansas is really work the detriment of the Democrats. So within the Republican Party, and particularly the right wing of the Republican Party, what Kobach did made great sense.
Hmm. Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Michael from Kansas City, Missouri. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. You had mentioned a little bit ago the Ronald Reagan making negotiations with Iran to hold off the hostage deal until after the election to make Carter look bad and lose the election. And we're now, so I would characterize that as not fair, not, you know, like a dirty trick kind of a thing. And I'm wondering how these, like, how you feel, how your guests feel that the voter suppression laws, you know, quote unquote registration laws, voter suppression laws, and things like, you know, Paul Ryan being called out on several issues on his speech as being blatantly false, how these kind of, again, what I would characterize as not cricket, not fair, ways to approach a campaign, how are those going to affect the electorate? Hmm. I'll take my question off the air.
Peverell, take a run at that, would you please?
Well, I think we're in a political season where we're certainly broken into very partisan camps, and I think mm-hmm. everybody is pretty much attached to their particular political perspectives right now. And I think a lot of the animus that's generated by these sorts of events tends to just reinforce the way people view politics, whether you're a Republican who thinks voter ID laws are great or a Democrat who sees them as a threat to the very foundation of the republic. We tend to go to the extreme. With the voter ID laws, they'll probably prevent a few people from voting, probably won't make much difference to most election outcomes. Most people who are going to vote and will manage to get over the obstacles. It will make it harder, and it'll probably take a little longer to vote, and people probably won't like that aspect of it. But we tend to go to extremes when we look at a lot of these political events, and we see them through very heightened political prisms right now. But, you know, the world will survive. We will get to November 7th. And at that point, we'll still have to figure out how we're going to govern ourselves.
Yes,
and we'll move on to a new series of entanglements.
Michael, thank you. Let's go to Aaron from Kansas City, Missouri. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi. I would just like to ask your panel to what is this undecided? What is the deal with not voting at all? I just read that we are missing 34% of female votes in this country. They're not voting. How is that even possible?
How is it possible, Bert?
Well, I mean,
doesn't anyone have at least one political issue hot button that they're willing to vote for?
Boy,
it really is remarkable. I think for those of us who spend a lot of time thinking and
yes.
talking about politics,
I agree.
But I think you can go into all kinds of neighborhoods and ask. People will be unregistered. They'll say, I really don't know. I don't care much about it. And 34%, that would give you a 66% turnout rate. That would be considered high. So I think it's a great question to ask. I'm going to go to Australia in January for 5 months. They have a mandatory voting down there, and they get very high percentages. The fine is modest. But one of the arguments with mandatory voting is that people really, you know, there's incentive to think a bit, at least, about politics.
But you couldn't imagine this country ever going direction, could you?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. I would say a couple things. First, I think we make it hard to vote in this country, particularly on a Tuesday. Oh. There's no explanation for why we don't vote.
No advance voting in Missouri, for instance.
Right, and why we don't vote on a Sunday over a 24-hour period. All the polls open and close at the same time, or perhaps a holiday. There are a lot of sort of just practical reasons why some people don't vote. And I think Byrd will also confirm this. Studies suggest that a lot of people don't think their vote matters. And as a mathematical statement, that's probably true. No single vote makes a difference. Some people extrapolate from that and say, well, why should I take an hour out of my day to cast a ballot when Barack Obama is going to lose in Kansas no matter what I do, for example? And so that's a disincentive for people to vote. And then I do think that there are people who are just confused by it all. They see commercial after commercial or read stories or hear shows, and they just say, I don't want to spend the time it takes to sort of sort this out. I don't have a strong feeling one way or another, so I won't participate on that basis. And that's why I think you have the turnouts that you do.
Professor Squire, you know, given what Dave just said, why don't we make it easier in this country to vote, say, on the weekends, where you could vote Saturday or Sunday or Tuesday, and give folks a series of options? You could vote in advance in a state like Missouri. You can in Kansas. You can't in Missouri. Why not make it easier? What's holding that up?
The real obstacle to getting people to turn out is getting them registered. And so the easier you make it to register, the more people get registered, the higher the voter turnout is in a state. So in a place like Minnesota, where you have Election Day registration, you get much higher turnout than you do in states that require you to be registered up to 30 days in advance of the election. We were on a trend towards making voting easier over the last couple of decades. That has been stopped for mostly partisan reasons over the last couple of years. We've had this sort of fascination with the notion of voter fraud without any real evidence that it ever takes place. And that's been used as a way to try to make it more difficult, more challenging for people to vote. And and we'll probably see some problems with that this time around. Moving it to someday other than Tuesday probably won't make a huge difference. Louisiana voted for a long time on Saturdays without any noticeable improvement in their turnout. Voting is a relatively low-cost activity, even in Missouri, where we mostly have to wait for Election Day to do it.
Yeah. Let's move on. We have just a few minutes left to the Missouri governor's race. Dave Spence, Republican, challenging Democratic incumbent Jay Nixon there. Peverell, Dave Spence, the Republican, says Missouri is like the Titanic. After hitting the iceberg, it's sinking because the state is so far behind on job creation. If that's the case, why is Jay Nixon seemingly cruising in this race, as far as we know, based on the polls?
Well, I think Nixon is greatly advantaged. One, that Spence is not well known. He's a businessman. He hasn't really spent as much money on the race as the Republicans probably hoped he would. And Nixon was able to go on television with an ad that said, look, we've managed to balance our budgets. We didn't raise any taxes. We kept a AAA bond rating here in the state of Missouri, and we're moving forward. And the Republicans simply haven't had the resources to really try to counter that.
It's interesting, Dave Helling. Dave Spence, again, the Republican in this race, does he even know where Kansas City is? We've hardly seen him up here.
No, he doesn't. He has not to date campaigned aggressively here, although I did see a Spence ad on television here yesterday in which he argues, by the way, that Jay Nixon should have rejected the stimulus, as if any state government would have said, no, we won't take, I think in Missouri's case, $2 billion over two years for teachers and all these other things. You know, I think Dave Spence is trying to nationalize the election. If you saw the debate, as you did, he made repeated references to Obama and job creation and things that are of national import rather than specific Missouri issues.
Yeah.
He said, for example, Dave Spence, that the roads are in pretty good shape in Missouri, which I'm not sure is a winning position. But Nixon has been able to really triangulate. I mean, he's the Bill Clinton of Missouri politics. Between Republicans and Democrats, he's not seen as overly partisan. He didn't propose major tax increases, as, say, Mel Carnahan had done. So I think that puts him in a pretty good place.
Peveril Squire, we have a few down-ballot races that voters will be looking at this fall. Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder versus Susan Montee, the Democrat. Secretary of State Jason Kander, a Kansas City state rep, a Democrat, against Shane Scholer. And for Attorney General Chris Koster, the incumbent Democrat, versus Ed Martin. I got to say, Chris Koster is quite the presence on TV, Pev. Do you buy that?
I think so, and
it
he's
helps.
Got a pretty good ad. You know, he's a Republican turned Democrat, and so I think he probably is able to pitch himself to both parties reasonably well. And Ed Martin, to this point, hasn't had the resources he needs again to try to counter that.
You know, Dave Helling, Peter Kinder, the sitting lieutenant governor, has been in that job for a number of years. He's going up against Susan Montee. Any reason to think Montee can unseat an incumbent?
Maybe, although I think one of the reasons Kinder has a reason for hope is that I think there will be a lot of ticket splitting going on in Missouri.
Yeah.
And I think some independents who would vote for Jay Nixon would say to themselves, okay, I'll vote for the Republican as lieutenant governor, is sort of a check on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, plus Kinder is fairly well known, Susan Montee perhaps not as much. So I think that suggests some trouble for her campaign. But we'll see. We were talking about this morning. Missouri is an amazing state this year.
Yeah.
Where you have sort of Nixon, McCaskill, Montee for the Democrats, Koster, all running their own races. How much of who has coattails? Who doesn't? What the Republicans will then respond with? It's a very, very fascinating dynamic in the state this year.
Well, 43 days from now, we'll have some answers. I want to thank all of you for coming on. Peveril Squire, thanks so much. Sure appreciate it.
My pleasure.
From the University of Missouri, from University of Kansas, Burdette Loomis. Bird, always good to have you.
Good to be here.
Dave Helling from the Kansas City Star.
Thanks,
David, appreciate it.
Thanks.
Learn more about our guests. Get more information about our show. It's all at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Tomorrow, the latest in area development news with Kansas City Star reporter Kevin Collison. Today's show is produced by Danny Alexander and Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.